You are now tuned into Big Market Butts.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone. And welcome to Big Market Bias. Coming at you live from the West Coast, I'm Cameron Green. And coming at us live from the East Coast, we've got Peter Dauber. What's happening, Peter?
So much is happening today, Cam. It's been a little bit since we've recorded. We had some life stuff that got in the way. You know, hey, it's okay. It happens. We're back, though. And we're ready. We're feeling the playoff energy. I'm feeling that playoff energy. I'm ready to put the regular season behind me, you know, here.
I'm feeling the play-in energy.
Yes. The play-in energy, which is going to be fun. Another massive win for the play-in is that we get this, you know, at least for me, I'm really looking forward to this Warriors-Kings matchup. You know, last year, playoff, you know, such a tough playoff series, 7 games, really great series. Every game was fun, you know. And now we're kind of getting that again a little bit 1 year later. Both teams are a little bit worse, I think. So we're getting that in the one game play-in scenario. You know, I love it so much. I got to ask right away. Obviously tonight, you know, we're recording just before the play-in games tonight. Our listeners will probably be hearing this after that game has already concluded. So with that in mind, I just want to get your feelings going in. Lakers, Pelicans, some people are saying, Cam, that they should tank the play-in game. Where are you? What are you feeling?
Never, ever, ever would LeBron allow that to happen. They shouldn't tank the matchup as much as I weirdly want them to lose, because right in the first round waiting for us in the 2 seed is the Denver fucking Nuggets. And obviously we've lost 8 in a row to them. It's very intimidating, but if we have any chance of beating Denver, it's in the first round. Obviously, Denver has kind of looked a little up and down going in to the playoffs. Murray seems like he's playing hurt. They've lost some easily winnable games. Back of my head, I'm wondering if they're like, we don't need the 1 seed. If we get the 2 seed, we'll get the Lakers and we can just destroy them and break their hearts again. And that's just infuriating to imagine. But I see no way that the Lakers will lose to the Pelicans. For whatever reason, we match up really well with them. We destroy them every single time. On the Pelican side, it's a little bit almost like a playoff matchup, because they just saw them. Saw the Lakers very recently. They can make adjustments. I mean, Rui just kept cutting behind everyone over and over again. LeBron set the table for 13 assists in the first half. The only member of the 40K, 11K, 11K team, 40,000 points, 11,000 assists, 11,000 rebounds. Unbelievable. And he had 8 assists in the first quarter, which got him to the 11,000 assists. And in year 21, LeBron has outscored every other player that's played in year 21, every single one of them. In fact, his fourth quarter scoring by itself, which led the league this year. Also, the Lakers have led the league in clutch play. They have the highest winning percentage in clutch games. For whatever reason, LeBron's 8.1 games in the fourth quarter is the most points by anyone else in year 21. So, like, Dirk, Robert Parrish, Karl Malone, none of them scored even 8 points a game in their year 21 season. So this is unprecedented. It also seems like LeBron is in a really nice groove going into the playoffs. That gives me a lot of confidence. So who knows? You know, if they did lose to the Pelicans, I really believe they wouldn't lose 2 in a row in the play-in. They'll beat whoever else. I would rather face the Warriors and the Kings, because for whatever reason, we struggle against the Kings. I've said it multiple times this year. But I've said it all year. I would love that Thunder matchup in the first round. But the downside to that is that Denver would probably have an easier matchup for themselves. And we'd probably get to the Eastern Conference Finals against them, and they would be rested just like last year, while LeBron AD might be running a little bit on fumes. So again, it's kind of like if we have to face Denver in the first round, it's better than facing them in the third round. I don't think anyone believes that the Lakers will beat them 4 times out of 7. Who knows?
I have a hard time believing they'll beat them once. So, you know.
Ouch.
Listen, the history, you know, what I have to do is just look at the last 10 times they've played each other, and it's pretty clear that this is just not a good team for the Lakers to face. The Pelicans is a pretty good matchup, though. So, you know, I kind of stare at that, and I say, you know, I don't know if Zion's going to be able to really impact. How much can he really do if LeBron and AD are there? How much can Brandon Ingram really do? You know, so the belief is pretty low for me in New Orleans here, but they are in New Orleans, right? So, you know, maybe something could happen. And I do think it would be fun to see that Zion-Jokic matchup a little bit.
That would be interesting.
I think they weirdly, because obviously the Nuggets have a lot of, I think they have, you know, a good scheme and a good defensive scheme. And I don't know if, you know, could Michael Porter Jr. bother Zion at all? Is that a matchup that he just gets bowled over? You know, does Zion just run him over? Do they put Jokic on Zion? What happens
isn't
there?
Isn't it Aaron Gordon who would guard Zion?
I guess probably, right? Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. In my head, I guess Michael Porter Jr. Is a little stronger. He's a little steadier, but maybe what? Not.
Aaron Gordon is definitely stronger than Porter Jr.
I don't know. It's just he has a blockier body. What can I say?
Okay.
He looks sturdy. He looks like a rock to me.
I don't think anyone thinks of Michael Porter Jr. as a defensive player.
I'm just saying the build, man. The build. Okay, the all build right. is what I'm, maybe he doesn't have the instincts. But when I look at him, I'm like, that guy, he's solid. You can't just
maybe,
run over him.
Maybe they start Jonas Valanciunas and have him guard Zion.
Well, that would be tough. I don't know why Jonas would be guarding his
it's
own
It's a terrible
team,
idea. Completely in jest.
Yeah. Is he turning coat? Like, he's gonna go to the Nuggets. He's going to put on a Nuggets jersey. Like, he's like, actually, I'm with Jokic now.
Oh, my God. That'd be unprecedented.
But anyway.
Who do you think is going to win Warriors Kings?
You know, I part of me does think that this Warriors, like, dynasty is coming to a close. And I could see the Kings winning, actually. I do think that, the Warriors, they have Steph. And that might just be too big of an X factor for the Kings to overcome. And that's totally fair. But I don't know, I just look at this Warriors team that's been kind of floundering a little bit. I know they've been kind of stepping up a little bit lately, but I still just have a lot of worries about them. They don't seem like the same old Warriors. I think the Kings, you know, like, yeah, they're not at the height of last year, but they're still good. They're still fast. You know, I think that they could do a lot of things, and it's only one game. You know, this is a Kings team that can push the pace, and I just look at the Warriors. I don't know if they have enough. I don't know. Wiggins' weirdness, Draymond is... There's just so many question marks around their entire roster, basically.
I would love to agree with you. It's just that the Kings have, like you said, they've kind of been floundering towards the end of the season. They've been kind of struggling. They also don't have Malik Monk, who I think usually kills the Warriors when he plays against them. And then the Warriors themselves have stepped up, like you said, recently. And I just wonder if Draymond is going to, you know, kind of get in Sabonis' head like he tends to do. And if Sabonis can't get going, then the Kings really don't have anything else except for, obviously, they have De'Aaron Fox. And I love De'Aaron Fox, but I just don't know if he can beat the Warriors by himself. So I think that the Warriors will win. I don't want them to win. I want the Kings to win, but that's just what my logical brain is telling me, is that the Warriors will win. And I hate that.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it would be fun if we could get a, like, Warriors Thunder first round series, but I don't know. I look at this. I guess what it is for me is I look at this Kings team and I say, okay, well then, what are you really? You know, you were fun last year. Now you've kind of taken a step back. are you a team that we should take seriously going forward at all? Or can we just kind of forget about the Kings and like, okay, this little mini run was fun, but ultimately it's not going anywhere if they can't beat this Warriors team. If they really can't beat them, then I don't know. I kind of look at this whole thing. I'm like, what are we even doing here in Sacramento at this point? So, I mean, I struggle with it. And obviously Malik Monk is out, and that is a problem. And that's why I feel like the Warriors probably should be favored. But, you know, they're in Sacramento, and I don't know. Part of me just is like, it's either now or never a little bit. Like, if you can't get over this hurdle, then maybe I took you too seriously, and that's totally fair.
I definitely did.
I thought they would be better this year. I thought they would too. Be like a four seed, top four seed at least.
I think I said three seed originally.
Maybe I will have to pull the tape, but it's tough. And obviously, like, you know, the Draymond Sabonis stuff. I mean, what if Draymond shows up to the arena with just like a shirt of him stomping on Sabonis' chest from last year? Like, there's a little bit of like. There's a little bit of trauma there, a little bit of bad blood. Sabonis, can he like fire back at Draymond, or is he can he kind of shrink? Because last year that was the biggest problem, was that Sabonis was not good in the playoff series. Can they kind of still do that?
He had a shoulder injury last year, I think.
That's fair, but still, it felt like he was getting swallowed up a lot.
No, he did 100%. It was kind of like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and so, you know, is that going to come back? Is that going to happen again, or? About someone else kind of rise above.
Another thing, it seemed to me that when they started to swallow the whistles later in the season, that's when the Kings started losing a lot more. So Sabonis is one of those guys that we talk about who gets hit in the face all the time but doesn't get called. There's that aspect of it. I don't know, but yeah, if they're not getting, like, if Malik Monk is not there and De'Aaron Fox isn't getting those easy, like, tricking people into giving him foul shots, if that's not there, like, where are they getting their offense from, you know? So, we'll see. I'm rooting for the Kings, I guess. If the Lakers lose, then I'm rooting for the Warriors, because I'd rather face the Warriors than the Kings. But for whatever reason, Kings, like, to face the Lakers. They like to beat the Lakers the last couple years. But enough play-in talk. We're going to watch that very soon. We are doing our awards today. And I hope we have something to disagree on. But I'm concerned that we may not.
We think alike. You know, we're too...
Our principles are very aligned.
Yeah.
Yes. We might need to add another person to this podcast next year to disagree with us.
Well, to get some new principles.
Yes. All right. Without further ado, what's your top five MVP ballot?
So for MVP, you know, obviously we do not have ballots. So we are not part of the actual official decision making.
We can dream.
Yeah. I filled this out exactly as, you know, as they do.
We know the NBA better than some of the people who do have ballots. Let's be real.
I mean, listen, I just saw a tweet that was of Kendrick Perkins' second all defense team, and I went, you know what? I know ball. I think I know ball better than this guy.
Or Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah.
Some of these guys. Who did you go for MVP?
I don't even know. I haven't seen it.
It wasn't the right choice. That's all I remember.
But, you know, so for me, I mean, I think MVP was pretty easy this year. I went Jokic 1, of course. I think that's what most people are going to have. SGA 2. I went Luka 3rd, Giannis 4th, and then Jason Tatum at 5. I wanted to have Giannis over Luka, but, you know, when the Mavs are top, I forget, are they the 4 or the 5? They're one of them, the 4 or the 5 seed. And the Bucks are kind of struggling a little bit. They're kind of gasping.
Yeah.
They're kind of gasping for air at the end of the season. And
it's Dallas ended up with one more win.
Yeah. And so I just kind of look at that and I say, you know what? I it just kind of flipped it for me. I was like, Luka, he's up there. He's right there. I would have put him second, honestly, if it wasn't for the Thunder getting the first seed. You know, when SGA, they secure that first seed, I said, okay. No, this SGA number 2 and Jokic number 1, I mean, for me, it was easy. It you watch him, he's clearly the best player in the NBA. The stats are all there. He's nuts. He leads the league in win shares again this year. And I look at it and I say, there's just no competition here. Gets Jokic's award. This guy is an all-timer, third time. You know, yeah. I mean,
I agree. It's Jokic number one with a pretty big gap between him and the rest of the field.
Yeah.
And Stephen A. Smith said, no doubt the SGA should be the MVP, by the way. Oh. And it's unfortunate. His vote counts.
Yeah, I can't quite get there, Stephen.
No. His team is so good, like, overall. Like, the structure of the team, the talent of his teammates. Jokic has been elevating the Nuggets without Murray in the lineup half the time. Now, I did have Giannis 3. Your argument does make me think about it a lot, but it was his best offensive season of his entire career. And it felt like he, you know, all the problems of the Bucks, none of it was his fault. He was giving his all. And Luka, I think, kind of lost me some votes early in the season when he was playing his way into shape a little bit. When Giannis came in, like, ready to go, you know. And also, Luka's team, I think, which might surprise some people, is a better structured team than the Bucks, and also more talent on the roster. Kyrie Irving,
pretty crazy.
Is this year better than Dame?
I would say so. This year,
you know, yeah.
I mean,
I no drama. Yeah. So, and also, you know, the coaching. I mean, Jason Kidd sucks. Doc Rivers sucks.
Yeah.
You know,
Adrian Griffin sucked.
Adrian Griffin sucks so bad. yet the Bucks are better somehow with Griffin. If you look at the numbers. I don't know what to make of it, but
I don't know.
I had Luka 4, Jason Tatum 5.
Okay, no, I can't argue too much about like whether or not Luka, like that Luka Giannis, that was close for me. A part of it does, you know, and I know this isn't on Giannis, but Dame just feels so checked out to me, and it does feel like a little bit. I actually heard Bill Simmons make this point, but I actually do kind of agree that we might be in for some sort of like Kyrie on the Celtics type situation here.
Ooh.
Where, you know, he was just like, I hate this team, get me out of here. Like, I'm gonna...
It seems like he hates the city. He hates living in Milwaukee.
And I don't know, Dame, you know, I don't think he quite ever meshed super great with Giannis. I was hoping they could kind of make it work, and it's gotten better, but it just doesn't seem like Dame is happy. Stuff. We keep hearing this little stuff, these little things about, oh, Dame doesn't like the city, he doesn't have his people, you know. All these little things that just kind of make you go, this guy just doesn't seem happy. He might just kind of be like, you know what? I don't care. Get me out of here. He's just going to go through the motions on the playoffs. And that scares me. That's not on Giannis. He's obviously been trying really hard. He's the leader of the team, but you know, it's been tough.
Another thing that came into my head was that Giannis is a two-way player, whereas Luka, that gets attacked on defense, you know. So, and Giannis was basically, him and Brooke were just the only good defenders on the entire team, basically. But pretty close ballot for the both of us. Defensive player of the year. Oh, that smile on your face makes me think we're going to disagree.
I've had so many feelings about Defensive Player of the Year this year. It's been, no, you know, it's really been the award that I've really, really wanted to get right. And I really wanted it to be anyone other than Rudy Gobert. You know, I looked at Wemby and really strongly considered it. I looked at AD. I was really heavily considering Herb Jones. But just the more stats you look at, the more you come back to it. At the end of the day, for me, you know, Rudy Gobert is the best defender on the best defense.
Oh, okay.
And
all right,
he's the anchor around it. And while I would argue that someone like, so I went I'll just say it right now. I went Gobert 1, Herb Jones 2. And Victor Wembanyama a third.
Okay.
And I wanted to put Herb Jones. I couldn't do it. And the reason I wanted to put Herb Jones is because Herb has been an outstanding defender this season. He is not just a rim protector. He's going out. He's blocking three-pointers, which is one of the hardest things to do without fouling. he is looking like Ed Reed out here. And, you know, I'm from Maryland, so that's high praise for me. This guy's over here intercepting balls, reading the passer's eyes, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful defensive basketball. He's weirdly long, and, like, he really makes use of it really well. At the end of the day, though, it just comes back to rim protection is the most valuable form of defense. And even though I do think that Rudy Gobert, you know, he does play with Jaden McDaniels, who is a better defender than anyone Herb has. And
or Victor.
Yeah. And he also, you know, I got to say, you know, his team defense is built around keeping Rudy Gobert in the paint. Whereas Herm Jones is asked to go a lot more places, to do a lot more things. And that is more difficult. The degree of difficulty there is higher. But at the end of the day, who is the more valuable defender? Who truly, you know, at least in the regular season, it was Rudy this year. The defense speaks for itself. It's been number one all season
long. All year.
Super consistent. Mm-hmm. So I have to give it to Gobert.
Yeah. I hate it too. I also gave it to Rudy. I have Victor at number two and Herb number three. The Spurs at one point had the 17th worst defense of all time. And in the last like month of the season, they went up to not so bad. They ended up 22nd, I think, in the league at the end of the year. So also another thing against Rudy is that when he's on the court, the team defense is only better by 0.9 points per 100 possessions. So that tells you that his team defense is so, so strong. And he's got all these other plus defenders, Anthony Edwards, obviously. Mike Conley is smart. You know, even guys off the bench are not zeros on defense, you know.
Absolutely.
Nas Reed. Slow-mo, Nas Reed.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they're the best defense by a mile. The gap between 1 and 2 is bigger than the gap between 2 and, like, 18. So you just have to reward the best defender of the best team, I think. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Victor has such a strong case. It's just not quite enough, and he's still so young. And you just know he's going to have a lock on this award for the next, like, 10 years. So I don't feel too bad. I know Michael Lapod Pena did vote for Victor Wembanyama as Defensive Player of the Year.
So did Ryan Russillo.
Yeah, well, and I actually even read the article, and Michael Pena made a really good argument, honestly. I got to give him credit. So I'm not going to be super upset if Rudy doesn't win, okay? But it's just, it seems to me the most logical choice. And I also love Herb. He's asked to do so much more than Rudy is. And he and Victor are both the kings of blocking 3-point shots, which is, like you said, like 99% of 3-point shots are not blocked.
Yeah.
Literally.
It's a needle you have to thread, because obviously if you know, if you foul the 3-point shooter, that's like the worst thing a defender could do in basketball. So yes. You have to just even going for it is so risky. So to be able to thread that needle and do it so well, so consistently, is exceptionally impressive.
Yes, yes. And it's very valuable. Very valuable.
It's incredible. It's a really valuable thing. Most of the time you're able to get the rebound. It's really good. Obviously, I mean, you look at Victor, especially, you know, you look at some of the clips. Because it feels like every week we get a new clip of multiple people on a fast break declining to go for it, declining to try and shoot because of Victor.
Yes.
And it's really so funny to watch. And, you know, it's just like some of these things that he does, you know, you're like, this guy, I mean, he's already in the conversation for best defender in the NBA, flat.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. So, you know, I think if he had been putting up the, you know, but he's a rookie. If he had been putting up last month's numbers all year, this wouldn't be a conversation. Mm-hmm. This would be Victor's award. But
totally,
he ramped up. He wasn't this guy in October, and that's totally understandable. You know, that makes sense. He's not going to be. He's going to grow, and the fact that he's going to grow even more, and next season he's going to be, you know, who knows who he's going to be? We'll see. It makes me. I share your feeling where it's probably going to be his award here soon. We'll give it to him 6 straight years to make up for Tim Duncan never getting one.
Tim Duncan didn't play enough minutes, that's all.
Yeah.
But, all right, well, let's move on to Sixth Man of the Year. I'll go ahead and go first this time. I have Malik Monk, number one, Naz Reid, number two, and Bobby Portis at number three. Malik Monk, to me, has just been exceptionally impressive. There's been times where Fox has been hurt and he had to play, step up in his place. And he's just, you know, I really wish that the Lakers had found a way to keep him 2 years ago. He would have been really great for the Lakers this year. And I just think it's exactly the type of player we almost always give the award to, is a streaky shooter off the bench. The Kings, once they lost Malik Monk, they definitely miss him a lot. He's even though he's not coming off the bench, he's vitally important to their game plan. I gave it to Malik Monk. What about you?
So I actually, I went Naz Reid over Malik Monk, personally.
Yes.
Naz Reid 1, Malik Monk 2. I actually gave it to Mo Wagner at 3.
Oh, interesting.
You know, you look at some of the per 100 stats off the bench, they kind of eye-pop a little bit to you. He's scoring really efficiently. He's not playing very many minutes, which is why he's not getting this award. But I just threw him in third because, you know, I liked what he was bringing, and nobody else, you know, I understood Bobby Portis, I hear it, but I just, nobody else really popped out to me at three. So I was like, you know what? Mo is that guy. I went Naz Reid, and a lot of it, and because I did look, I thought about Malik Monk. I really think, for the most part, the two people that most people are considering. And for me, I went Naz because, you know, like you said, we often give this award to these kind of bucket getters off the bench, the Tyler Herro, Jordan Clarkson type person, the Lou Williams of the world. And for Naz, you know, when I watch the Timberwolves, he's just doing so many little things. You know, he's shooting threes. He's rim protecting at times. He's guarding out a three-point line. You know, he's rebounding. He is doing a lot of these little things that's contributing to winning. That was also part of it for me, is I know that the sixth man isn't the first person you look at when you look at why isn't this team winning. But... you know, Malik Monk, you know, sixth man on the 9 seed versus, you know, I mean,
the number obviously, one seed.
Obviously the Wolves ended up at the 3 seed, but still, three, but they were, you know, they were up there. They were almost, you know, they were in the top echelon all year. And I look at Naz Reid as a contributing part of that. I wanted to kind of reward the sixth man of a team that's winning, of a player that's contributing to winning. And to me, you know, it seemed like he can stick out and is almost a better, you know, I hate to be slanderous here, but I look at him, I'm like, you know, he's a little bit more consistent than Karl Anthony Towns. Obviously, Cat's a better shooter, but Naz can shoot the ball. He can do a lot of these little things. I like them. You know, we were saying, I kind of like him with
you convinced me.
I did? Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow,
I switched it. Yeah, look at you. you definitely convinced me.
Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting to change your hearts and minds. But listen, this is, you know, we value winning here on Big Market Bias.
We do value winning. You're so winning right.
Players.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we always give it to the same type of player. And Naz Reid has a two-way quality to him. I mean, he's not quite, like, an amazing defender, but he's not as bad a defender as Monk is. And he's doing more of the little things. I think you're right. It should be Naz Reid.
And Malik Monk, I mean, obviously he has a great case. You laid out the case for him a second ago. I wouldn't be mad at either of them getting the award. That's just really what it was for me. You know, sixth man is tough sometimes because, you know, they're the ones off the bench. They're not the eye popping ones. A lot of the time they're not playing crunch time. So it's about kind of those you know, the in between moments. You know, the end of the back half of the first quarter, the third quarter, second quarter runs that these guys are really a part of for the most part.
Well, how about most improved player? Who do you have?
So I went a little back and forth on this. I actually considered, believe it or not, Hartenstein for a minute there.
Wow.
I didn't have him on my, I didn't end up having him on the ballot, but I considered him for the award because I was like, you know, this guy really stepped up and improved a lot. And became like a very, because I thought when Mitchell Robinson went down that then the Knicks were going to be like really hurting, but he kind of stepped up in a really big way. Anyway, I don't have him on my ballot, but okay. Shout out to Isaiah Hartenstein for being a, you know, being a great guy and really, really trying. No, I went Coby White, Tyrese Maxey, and Jalen Williams. I had to give it to Coby White.
We are exactly aligned.
Exactly? Wow.
Exactly.
Amazing. Listen, it's the hive mind. What can you say?
Yeah, I had both Coby White and Tyrese Maxey on my fantasy team. So Coby was like, I picked him up off the waiver wire, and he ended up like blowing up. And
yeah.
I mean, I was so surprised and pleased by how he, who he became, and I'm really excited for who he's going to turn into moving forward. You know,
yeah.
I mean, he got a little bit hurt towards the end of the year, but
I wanted to give it to Maxey for a large portion of the year because I really respected the jump he made, obviously, when Embiid went out, and he was able to, I mean, they lost a lot, but he was still able to kind of give them some semblance of competitiveness. But at the end of the day, you know, Coby White, I mean, he went from a guy who at the beginning of this year, I was sitting here saying, you know, that Coby White guy, he's fun, but I don't know if he'll ever be anything in this league. He might just be out in a year or two. And now it's like, now he's looking like a genuine starting caliber guard, you know, like if you could put him, like you could put him on a good team. And I feel very confident that he'd be able to produce.
Totally.
And it's just going from that, going from the real bottom to like serviceable, solid starter. And not only that, but actively it like, you know, Zach LaVine went down and the Bulls got better.
Yep.
That is, and that's because Coby White, that's because he fits better with the team. The Bulls are genuinely better with Coby White rather than Zach LaVine. Coby White is a better player. He is the kind of point guard you want.
He's less selfish.
Yeah. And he is motor, and he
competes on defense.
Yeah. And it's not this style that's so like, he doesn't do that kind of that thing where he forces you to play his style a little bit, where Zach LaVine does. He can fit into your team.
Yeah.
And your team concept. And the Bulls are genuinely a better team because of Coby White running the point for them.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I mean, that's what it was for me. I know that the Bulls are like the 9 seed and are not going anywhere and are most likely not.
They would be like top 5 draft pick if not for Coby White.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you look at the team, that is a little talented because they have DeMar DeRozan, who killed it for my fantasy team this year. By the way, Cam.
Oh.
Won my fantasy league.
Back-to-back champ.
We went back-to-back, baby.
Wow.
Back-to-back. That's how it is. You're looking at a master over here.
Uh-huh.
And DeMar DeRozan was my big pickup this year that helped out. So, you know, the Bulls are competitive, at least little tiny, tiny, tiny bit competitive. And Coby White is a big part of that. And
totally.
Going forward for the Bulls, I still think they should blow it up. They should trade DeMar. They should trade everybody but Coby. I think they should keep Coby White.
Yes.
He's still super young.
Yeah.
And like build around him a little bit. Obviously, I don't think he'll ever be like best player on a championship team guy.
No.
But in terms of a good young point guard who can get better, give him the keys, and you could have a solid third guy, maybe, a good third banana on a team, or maybe even, you know, just somebody who can contribute. And even if maybe he doesn't do anything with the Bulls, you know, you keep him, raise his stock up, and chip
get
him
a
out.
Nice return, yeah,
yeah, get a nice return for him. You know, this is a real guy. If this Chicago team just brings Zach in and sticks Coby back on the bench next year, that's malpractice. That is genuine malpractice We have to have the Adam Silver go into the GM offices and take over the team because they are ruining the city of Chicago if they do that.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, and then also with Jalen Williams, he elevated his game as well. He became the third best player on the Thunder, who had the number one seed. And he's got such a unique game too that that's what I like about him. He's different. You know, mm-hmm. he's hitting these mid-range shots at a really high clip, and he competes defensively too. It's just he's a fun guy to watch.
He's also doing a lot in the clutch moments. You know, like end of games, he's involved. He shoots the ball. He makes a lot of smart decisions, smart cuts, and it does seem like they rely on him a little bit in the clutch in those like end of game scenarios, which is cool. And it's nice to see. I think Jalen Williams went from, like, blog boy darling a little bit to, like, genuine, legitimately good player who can score and you can rely on. And it's pretty great. Yeah.
So we have less than 20 minutes before Z gets back. So let's try to lightning round these next couple of ones so we can talk about All-NBA.
Yes, we do not have to go long with these.
Yes, yeah, Rookie of the Year is pretty obvious. Victor Wembanyama, Chet Holmgren, and then Brandon Miller.
Yeah. That's exactly what I had too.
Yeah, and we talked about Victor so much in the last several episodes. We love Chet. Don't need to say much more. Coach of the Year, who do you have?
I got Mark Daigneault, Chris Finch. I went second. And third, I actually went Tom Thibodeau.
Okay.
He dealt with a lot of injury issues, a lot of guys in and out of the lineup.
Second His seed. Offense is so good.
Yeah, and that's not very common for a Tom Thibodeau team.
It's actually, I was corrected on this. He's underrated as an offensive coach. If you look at his teams historically, he schemes up a pretty good offense no matter who his personnel is. You'll be surprised, he's got top 15 offense in like every single year that he's coached.
I guess he's just
not what you think of, because you think of a grinding defensive team when you think of Tom Thibodeau, someone who grinds his players into dust. I'm number one, Mark Daigneault. Number two, Chris Finch for the Timberwolves. And Rick Carlisle at three for the Pacers. Because he had to deal with Tyrese Halliburton's injury. He made Obi Toppin a not useless player. Earlier in the year, you were saying basically he was a useless player. He's this amazing, good player who can shoot threes and dunk on people and come off the bench and be really good.
Yeah, also shifting lineup for Rick Carlisle, right? Because he had a mid-season trades that kind of shook up the stuff that he's dealt with. Succeed in the East, you know. I don't hate it. I don't hate it at all. I had Joe Mazzulla there. I had really quick. I had Joe Mazzulla there at third, because he, you know, hey, number one seed.
Michael Pena voted Joe Mazzulla as his coach of the year.
Number one.
Number one.
That's insane. I know. I can't believe he has a vote, and I don't.
I know.
He's really? Are we? Okay, that's ridiculous. Listen, I am a Celtics guy. I'm a Celtics big fan. Nobody is crediting Joe Mazzulla with this.
He's got the most stacked roster in the league. Yeah. Like,
we don't have to. Props to him. I was giving him third in the list because, hey, he's really good. And, like, the team is really good. And I felt like he should be rewarded with a third spot. Not over Mark Daigneault. Not over Chris Finch. Absolutely not.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, Clutch Player of the Year. Who do you got?
I went Jalen Williams, believe it or not.
What?
You know? Yeah.
He's
really valuable in the clutch. His clutch numbers were really good. You know, so it really just went down to that. I was just looking at clutch numbers and just saying, okay. I went Michael Porter Jr. For number two because, you know, again, his clutch numbers really good, really really efficient in the clutch situations according to NBA.com. So I was just like, hey, you know, sure, my guy. I went DeMar third. Feeling good about that one.
DeMar third, nice.
Yeah, he won it a couple years ago. His clutch stats are still really good. So I'm like, hey, who did you go?
So I have LeBron James at number one.
Okay. Well.
So Lakers have the best record in the clutch this year. LeBron led the league in fourth quarter scoring.
Okay.
And there were so many moments where he just took over the game when they should have lost, and he just dominated. I don't care. I get one homer pick a year, okay?
You know, I'm fine with you using your homer pick on Clutch Player of the Year. That's fine. You can do that. That's totally okay. I mean,
no one else is going to vote for him. No one else will.
You're right. You do make a good argument. It almost feels, honestly, to me, I didn't even consider LeBron because it honestly feels like the award is beneath him. That's why. Like really? Or give him clutch player, like clutch
That's
player.
Right.
He's LeBron James. Yes. And you're going to give him clutch player of the year. You know?
Well, I have Nikola Jokic at two. I originally had him at one because he's, you know, they have one of the best records in the clutch, and he's practically unstoppable. And it's not just the scoring for him too; it's the passing, the carving up the defenses, and it just feels like in the crunch time, Denver was kind of inevitable a little bit this year. Mm-hmm. And then I have Luka three, so very big names for my three guys.
Yeah.
So
I guess I thought a little smaller.
Yeah, that's my big market bias, I guess. All right, all NBA. I'm going to guess that we had the same first team.
I mean, yeah, I'm going to assume so. It seems like kind of the most logical first team. Jokic, SGA, Doncic, Giannis, and Tatum.
Yep. Totally agree. I don't know how you can argue anyone else except for maybe Jalen Brunson instead of maybe Tatum, I guess.
Yeah.
But that seems disrespectful to the number one seed in the league.
Exactly. I did give some thought to Brunson over Tatum, but ultimately, yeah, first seed in the league, far and above everybody else. He's the best player.
Yeah. Just got to do that.
Yeah.
Second team, that's where it starts to get interesting. So,
yeah, give me your second team.
I have Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, and LeBron James.
Okay.
By the numbers, LeBron is about the seventh best player in the league. No one else thinks that. No one thinks that in their head that LeBron right now is the seventh best player in the league. So many people are leaving him off all NBA entirely. Most people, I think, would have Kawhi there instead of LeBron.
That's what I have. I do.
And everything else is aligned?
Actually, yes. Everything else is aligned in our second team.
Unbelievable, man.
Other than Kawhi. I couldn't put LeBron over Kawhi. I just looked at Kawhi Leonard. You know, the Clippers dealt with a weird season. You know, midseason trade for Harden was it kind of shook things up a little bit. Kawhi Leonard has played his like healthiest season since I think I read 2014, 2015.
Yeah. Well, seems like he got to 65 games and then he stopped playing.
He's like, all right, I did it. Yeah. You know, that's fine. I think that he really gives a lot of credit for that. He's the best player on that team. Mm-hmm. He's been pretty much their stable force. He's a two-way player. Mm-hmm. And I look at them and obviously the five seed in the West, and it felt really weird to me. You know, we have such a stacked West. It felt really weird to me to not have a Clipper in
the
that
Lakers
top 10.
Have 47 wins, which is the over, by the way, because their under over before the year was 46.5. And nice they're the nine job. Seed. The ninth seed.
Exactly.
It's
the
unbelievable.
West is crazy.
Yeah.
The West is
it's
so
frustrating.
So, you know, just for me, that's really what it came down to is just the Clippers. The Clippers are, you know, they're up there. They're not in the play-in, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have AD in the second team. That felt like a nod. And so for me, I just said, you know, Kawhi. I would rather have Kawhi, you know, right now anyway, personally. I just think.
I would not.
That's fine. But I
would not.
So
71 games for LeBron, which is his most also in the last, like, 4 years.
It's been a lot of guys staying healthy this year. It's been nice.
Yeah. And then Durant also stayed healthy this year. And he had this quote where he's like, well, yeah, I stayed away from the people who like to flop.
I saw that. I saw that.
His own teammate flopped into him. That was Bruce Brown.
Yeah, I remember that.
So this is interesting. There might be a little bit of some subliminal stuff going on there because Kevin Durant was dating Lana Rhodes. And then Bruce Brown dated Lana Rhodes after Kevin Durant. And then Lana Rhodes went on a podcast and shit-talked Kevin Durant.
Oh, my God. Really? I did not see any of this. Oh,
yeah.
So messy.
I know. I don't know why NBA players think it's a good idea to date porn stars. It's like you have the – or Instagram thoughts. It's like you have the choice of all these women. Like you could – throw a net and pick and get 20,000 women that would love to date you. And you pick porn stars and Instagram thoughts? Like, what's wrong with you guys? Anyways, So, and then also some other guy on another team dove into his legs 2 years ago. I mean, LeBron actually had that too, where they were like the third seed in the West the year after winning the bubble title. And then, I can't remember his name right now, but the guy on the Hawks dove into LeBron's leg going for a loose ball. And it was like,
oh, bad. I do remember that.
It was so bad. And then LeBron had an issue all the rest of the year. They were messed up. Third team. Go ahead and tell me.
So I did have LeBron. That's where I had him on the third team. I went, so third team was really hard. The easy ones for me was LeBron, Steph, because even though this is a weird season, Steph is still a top player in the league. He's the only reason that the Warriors are even remotely in consideration. And the Warriors, the 10th seed, sure. But you got to keep in mind, they're 46-36. So, you know, I mean, how much can we really ding him for that? And then Jaylen Brown, I went as well. Him and Jason are really the engines of the team. Obviously, Jason is the best player, but Jaylen is the number two. And he's the number two on a 64-win team that blew the doors off the entire conference. And he's been really good this year. His defense has stepped up. He's shot selection, I think, has been a little bit better. So I'm feeling good about him. And then I went Devin Booker. And this one was really tough. I went Haliburton for my fifth spot.
Yeah, I had to give it to Haliburton. I love his game. And the first half of the year, he was so good. I just felt like it carried kind of the rest of the season for him a little bit. He still, I think, led the league in assists.
Yes, he still ended up as the assist leader. You're right.
Yeah. So, and then obviously I had Kawhi Leonard on the third team. I have Zion Williamson on the third team. I just thought it was his healthiest year. Obviously, he got past the 65-game threshold. And the Pelicans have been, I mean, they fell to the seventh seed, but for a while it looked like they were right there in the top six seed. And it seems like when Ingram is in, Zion's game kind of suffers. And then when Ingram is out, Zion flourishes. So something to keep an eye on there. And then I also gave it to Domantas Sabonis. He led the league in triple-doubles. He just blew up the league with his numbers, I thought. And then I have Steph Curry. I really, really, really wanted to put Victor Wembanyama instead of Steph.
Oh, really?
I did, but I didn't do it.
that was a thought for me. I was thinking about it, but I can't do it when someone is so, you know, they're just so far down that list. You know, they're so far away from any sort of contention.
Yeah,
I couldn't put it all. I'm sure Victor will get there. But for me, I couldn't do it. So you don't have Booker and you don't have Jaylen.
No, I do not.
Okay.
Booker, it just felt like did he play 65 games?
Yeah, he played 65. He did. He ended.
It just felt like he was hurt all year for some reason to me. But obviously he's very important to the Suns and everything. But I don't know.
But 68.
Okay, so he barely passed the threshold. I mean, yeah, I could maybe do him instead of, I don't know. It's tough. The third team is the toughest one because you're going to leave someone out. And I don't want to just do what everyone else is doing.
I did feel bad leading Sabonis off. That was the one for me where I just really wanted to have him in there. It feels weird not having a Kings representative, but also not having a Pels representative either for me.
Yeah.
It all just felt a little weird. And at the end of the day, I guess just Booker. It didn't feel to me like Zion or Sabonis or really anyone else had a season that could supplant Booker in my head.
It's weird because Booker was first team last year, second team, you know,
I believe,
and it was a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer. And this year, it's like, it's really a tough debate. The third team is so difficult. There's like eight players that could be on there. I wouldn't really have an argument.
I mean, the league is stacked, you know? It really is. I mean, there have been years where, you know, you get to the third team and you're kind of like, you know, okay, like, I guess this guy's good.
I'm really raking the dregs here.
Yeah, but here, it's like, no, like, there's a lot of guys that really deserve it, and I can't get mad at anyone. I just, for me, you know, that I look at that. Halliburton was tough, obviously, because the last, basically since the All-Star break, he hasn't been as good. But, you know, for most of the season, he was blowing the doors off the entire league.
Yeah, yeah.
So, for me, and obviously also part of it, I know that we don't have real votes. But
yes.
The contract part, at least for me, it did weigh on it a little bit. And I said, yeah. You know what? This guy, I don't want to be like, if I did have a vote, I wouldn't want to be the guy that's standing in the way of him getting his bag.
Yeah. He deserves it. He deserves a Supermax.
He does. For sure. And I think that ultimately Tyrese Halliburton is a top 15 player in the NBA.
Totally.
So.
Yeah. And that was one reason Jaylen Brown is off for me. To me, he's not a top 15 player in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I didn't put him on there.
I guess that's fair. I just, you know, for me, it's like... The team
all these other teams so get two dominant. Players and Boston doesn't? Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, hey, we're the best stand 64 wins. We stopped playing a month ago. We haven't played basketball in a month. And Jaylen has been a very important part of this team, and he deserves third team All-NBA. The one thing for me, I will say, I would have definitely had Donovan Mitchell in. Had he crossed the 65-game threshold, that's the one kind of sticking point for me where, he's been
struggling recently, too.
Yeah, he's been struggling a little. He's been struggling recently, which is totally fair. But at the same time, you know, he held the Cavs up for so long without Mobley and without Garland and was really killing it, scoring really well.
He's incredible, yeah.
I would have had him.
Sometimes it seemed like he would get tunnel vision when the Cleveland offense works a lot better when you're passing and moving the ball. So that was one reason that I didn't consider him. Because sometimes he is playing to the detriment of his team's success.
I mean, that's fair. And that's I think, a big part of his playoff limitations and everything that goes along with that. Because he does. You're totally right. He gets this tunnel vision, and he just kind of... You can tell. I can tell from the TV, this dude's not passing this ball. He is shooting no matter what happens. He's shooting or he's getting a foul. He's not passing the ball. And you can tell a lot of the time, and he goes in, I guess, like kind of Hooper vision almost. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's just not good. So I get that. But for me, he's been a spectacular player. He kept the Cavs afloat. If he had hit the 65-game threshold, I would probably have him in over Booker. Most likely on the third team, but he couldn't. He's 55. Another one for me is, honestly, even though he missed so much of the time, if there wasn't that limit, you know, I would have Joel Embiid probably in the third team. I probably would find a way to fit him in. He only played 39 games.
Yeah.
So that's tough, but I would still, you know, if the limit didn't exist, I would be sitting here making the argument, yes, he only played 39 games. But those 39 games were first-team all-NBA level games.
Totally.
So giving him a third-team spot would feel okay to me, but we can't do it.
No, we cannot. Well, we will save all defense for next time. We're going to talk again later this week after we know more of the playoff matchups, maybe do some playoff previews. No, definitely do some playoff previews.
Absolutely.
And we'll go from there. I've got to get going, though.
Thank you for tuning in to Big Market Bias. If you have any strong opinions on anything we said here today, please email us at bigmarketbias@gmail.com. If you hear a credible NBA analyst with a prediction, send that in to us as well. Have a great weekend, everyone. Peter and Cam signing off.